you've been around, they've seen you before. Oh, good, I have a... I'm calling the Control Committee of the General Government to order. For information of those of you who are here for the first time right now, as you know, this is the last week for committee meetings. There's lots of running around. Members from the House are running over here. Our citizens have to run and testify on other bills. So you're going to see people in and out, and we're sorry for that confusion. And it will be a very hectic afternoon as you hear me wield a pretty mean, powerful gavel all afternoon to get through everything, because this is the last day this committee can operate. And anything that's not done by the time we leave is, as Senator Lynn would say, if you were here, it will just go to sleep. At this point, I am going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3623. Representative Sinceri, nice to have you with us.
Yes, thank you, Senator Trell, for your record. My name is Ron Sinceri. I'm State Representative District 22. Thank you for hearing this bill. It's an important bill passed out of our committee without exception, also passed out of the floor with only a couple of exceptions. This is a bill that I think it has more importance to some than others, obviously. 180,000 men and women missing in action, POWs, over a period of many years. But looking recently, and even Vietnam, we still have over 2,500 missing in action, and about 60 of those specifically from the state of Oregon. It's something that we certainly felt, in conjunction with other states who are doing the same thing, it's something that we want to remember and be able to pass on to generations. And what the bill specifically does is it requires that state institutions and public institutions fly the POW flag only six times on six holidays per year. Those flags are being donated, so the cost, while it's reflected there, is $25 a piece, will be negligible because it'll all be donated. So we commend the bill to the committee and hope that you pass it out. I'm just trying to be brief.
Okay. Sure. Any questions? It sounds good. I think I don't think the bill will have any trouble.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. I'm closing. Yes, I'm going to read this. The public hearing on 3623. I'm going to now open your bill. I'm opening a public hearing on 2894. Representative Shedley, it's nice to have you here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's a pleasure to be here. Mr. Chair, member of the committee, for the record, Wayne Shatterly, State Representative, District 34. This bill is introduced at the request of the City of Dallas, but it affects cities and local districts, counties, and throughout the state relative to we call it intergovernmental trusts. These are actually, you can think of them as deferred compensation plans. These are funds are commingled, and you're all familiar, I'm sure, with deferred compensation plans that we have in local governments here in Oregon. Is a requirement of 100% suretyship, bonding requirement, which is having an effect on making it difficult for cities and counties and local governments to continue to offer these deferred compensation trust plans to their employees. The cost is becoming restrictive, and with 100% suretyship, the bonding requirements, we're reaching a point where bond underwriting may be unavailable, and it's going to ultimately affect the availability of these accounts for our public employees at the local level. This bill addresses that by reducing the bonding requirement from 100% to 10%. That is consistent with federal requirements for trusts such as this, so that aligns Oregon law with respect to this fidelity bonding requirement to federal law, and as far as I know, if not all, certainly the vast majority of states that have similar plans. It passed, I think, with only one no vote in the House, and again, the importance of this is to continue to make these plans viable by continuing to their availability to local governments to provide to their employees. I have a couple of folks from ICMA who I think will be much better to be able to testify as to the technical aspects of this, but I, as a bit of a sincerity, I commend it to you and would ask for your favorable action on it. I guess I would underscore that Judy Orbelow, Representative Orbelow, was one who expressed concern about the, she was a no vote, I think, on the floor about reducing this. I think she may have been under the impression that, that the bonding requirement protects the plans from credit risk and other market risks, and it does not. It's not intended to do that. This is a bond requirement that protects assets from fraudulent activities, misappropriation, and given the level of regulation and review over these plans, in a very sophisticated world of public asset management, that kind of risk is extremely low. So a 10% bonding requirement, in all reality, does not subject these assets to a substantial degree of risk.
Such a large amount that you wonder about it from that standpoint.
Sure, and again, Senator Crow, Mr. Chair, I'll let the experts from ICMA testify for that. I think the perhaps the problem is not so much getting to the 10%, it's really where we are today with the 100% requirement and how out of step that is with the market and with the federal requirements for these plans and other state plans as well. So I think the problem is not so much the getting to 10%, it's where we're starting from at such a remarkably high level of the bonding requirement.
Okay. Thank you very much.
And enjoy being in front of your committee. Enjoy the rest of the session here this afternoon.
Good. Yes. I appreciate you coming in. I know you're in a hurry to get back. I'm going to recess the hearing on 2894 just momentarily, and I'm going to recess the committee momentarily.
Hey.
Okay. A public hearing on House Bill 2463 for a few minutes. Representative Schrader, where are you? It was right at the door just a second ago.
Okay.
If he comes in here with cake.
There he is.
Okay. Representative Schrader. I said the first person walks in here with cake and doesn't bring me some. Good afternoon, Representative Schrader.
Good afternoon, Mr. Schrader.
I've opened a work session on the subcommittee department on 2463.
Thank you very much. For the record, I'm Kurt Schrader, State Representative, House District 23. This bill comes over from the House, had great support over there. I think the vote was 43-9 or some such like that. It was well received. This is kind of an attempt to deal with some of the land use considerations that have come up over the years, and particularly in the urban reserve areas and small communities that are outside of more of the metropolitan areas and some of the existing cities. Basically, this bill was originally designed to allow kind of a serious group of citizens to pursue the possibility of incorporation and basically, frankly, determine their own destiny, providing they met certain criteria. It basically modifies the neighboring city's objection rights by allowing for an arbitration by the county rather than an outright veto. We got into a situation with one community where they were interested in looking at what would it take to incorporate? And they had a problem because the existing statute says you can't do the economic feasibility study if any neighboring city would object. And this has been an issue, I think, for a number of communities over the years.
So it was just the Beaver Creek, Oregon City?
That was Beaver Creek and Oregon City. Beaver Creek's in my district, so the issue became came on my horizon, so to speak. And so in response, I thought, well, geez, these citizens are really trying to do a neat thing here. They're not saying no to urban-style development. They're saying, well, geez, let's have an opportunity to do it our way. But because of a quirk in the law that predated Senate Bill 100, even our land use planning, they were unable to do the economic feasibility study. I talked with council and mayor of Oregon City, and he said, well, I'm not necessarily against this, Kurt, but I don't want to give up my veto rights. I need to have some way to kind of see what they're going to have, what the program will be, what the density will be, what the boundaries will be before I'm willing to go there. And unfortunately, under current law, that's not possible. So House Bill 2463 modifies that a little bit by going, allowing for an appeal and arbitration process where this proposed new city would be talking with the existing city, work out hopefully most of the arrangements or boundaries or disagreements or sharing of services, whatever the case may be. If they're unable to come to resolution, then what would happen?
Just a second. I'm going to close the subcommittee, the general government committee, and open the full committee.
Allow them to go to the county, should there still be some differences, and the county would then have the opportunity to look at the proposed new city, the concerns of the existing city, and make a determination. If the either party feels that, geez, that's not good enough, they still think they've got a good case, there's provision in the bill to go to LUBA, which is a current land use authority, to make sure we're following the good land use precepts and allow for designation of the new city, or indeed say no. Basically, it's a pretty straightforward document here. I think it clearly states that the new area is going to have to require urban-level services, that the density and development will have to be comparable to the surrounding areas, surrounding urban areas. I think that's to make sure that we don't end up with little martini farm cities developing here and there. In talking with the work group that I put together, had several different citizens involved. It had League of Oregon Cities, Associated Oregon Counties, Metro, and DLCD. And so out of that group came, this bill that kind of tried to address most all the concerns. The counties were fine with the arbitration process. I've since talked to two of the three commissioners in my own county, Clackamas County, explained the bill to them. They're okay with this process.
What about the third?
I wasn't able to get a hold of the third. And that was all done in the last 24 hours when the chair was kind enough to put the calendar trying to get through to everybody in that time period. So basically, I feel this is a good start. I'd entertain questions. I mean, it guarantees compact, non-sprawl development. It's a real great way to keep the Valley City from this inexorable sprawl onto the best farmland in this country, and yet allow for self-determination and new satellite communities to develop where it's appropriate in specific areas, such as urban reserves and the rural unincorporated communities.
Representative Schrader, my understanding, and I might ask them to come up and join you at some point here, but my understanding is, for example, the Oak Grove area, and you happen to know what I'm saying. I'm sorry I'm talking about a specific one, but by the way, I should declare a conflict of interest. I happen to live in that particular area, so let's just put that on the table. Okay. What would that do to the Oak Grove, any consideration Oak Grove might have? And I'm not advocating one way or the other.
Very good question.
Oak Grove, if they ever wanted to become a city.
You bet. And I tried to work with some representatives from the Oak Grove area to see how close we can come. I have some differing opinions. The bill, everyone agrees the bill does not hurt Oak Grove in terms of affecting them in a negative way.
Can you say everyone? Can you?
That would be the commissioners I've talked to, DLCD, the Metro people. I've talked with them since situations arisen. I talked with legislative council here. They actually think that the current wording might include Oak Grove. I've talked with DLCD. They're not so sure about this. The situation gets to be a definitional one. The wording in here talks about mostly areas outside of urban growth boundaries, i.e. urban reserves and rural unincorporated communities. Oak Grove and some other urban developments could be within an urban growth boundary, and possibly, depending on how the county interpreted the language, maybe be outside of the scope of this statute. I think the question for the committee, one of the questions for the committee to wrestle with is, geez, this does get away, it does get rid of the 3-mile veto right that the city, pre-existing city, absolutely has. So I think that's an advantage to Oak Grove or any other community. They at least have the potential, under if this bill passes, to go to an arbitration process where they can get their day in court without, being shut out entirely from the process. We may want to do some amendments to see if we can more directly tie, if the Oak Grove community and others are interested, to this. But I think it's kind of this a way that the cities, when I talk to League of Oregon Cities and the Associated Oregon Counties, are very concerned, wanted to make sure that the needs of the pre-existing cities were also met. Some of these cities in our area, Happy Valley, some of those, would like to expand some to build up their tax base or whatever. We have to allow that opportunity, I think, for some of the pre-existing cities. So this puts it, I think, in a very fair arbitration type of experience and allows for both sides to make their case, which is not currently the situation.
Okay. Mr. Trader, and if, with the committee's indulgence, if I could, I'm going to ask if Dick Jones would come up and join us at the same time. Dick is the one who's brought the real concern to me, and I thought, well, Kurt was, Representative Schrader's here, and this is the time maybe we could just talk about this very thing. And we do have to keep, as you know, I keep talking about this is the last day, and I have a heavy agenda, so I don't know what extent we can get through all of this. Okay? Dick, you have some concerns.
You want my concern for my full testimony?
No,
my next commander for the testimony is just a concern.
No, why don't you identify yourself, please?
Okay, my name is Dick Jones. I live at 3205 Southeast Vineyard Road in Oak Grove.
Okay.
And I chair the Oak Lodge Community Council.
Okay, you've heard the explanation that Representative Schrader has given of the bill and the impact on Oak Grove. It's his interpretation. I'd like to have your response to those concerns.
Well, let me go down to where I talk about my concerns in my testimony. And first, when I talk about my concerns, the 2463-2, I was not one of those citizens that was asked to participate in the discussion of the bill. So I've been outside that discussion that they've had of people, including all the governments. In Section 3, Big 2, little a, limits incorporations to areas entirely within urban reserves or rural unincorporated areas. This would limit forming new cities only to those around fringes of the existing urban growth boundaries, and this simply would not give an area like Oak Grove any assistance in the problem of the current 3-mile rule. The context of Section 3, starting at number 3, talks of obtaining of approval from the county court to move forward with the actual incorporation vote, when in fact a major roadblock caused by neighboring cities stops the process very early, because neighboring cities' issue is a significant hurdle, but it starts even before the incorporation process can start, because governments, and in parentheses the county and DLCD and the Community Solutions Team, are reluctant to give support or will not give support, especially financial support, to groups trying to form a city until approval of neighboring cities has been obtained. In today's environment, the real cost comes in the process of public education on the issue and the studies that are mandated by the statutes, for example, the economic study. In Section 3, Big 2, little c, big D, speaks of having a comparable density to neighboring cities. One of Oak Grove's neighboring cities, Johnson City, is zoned entirely multifamily. This definition would be unreasonable for application to Oak Grove. Section 3.5 speaks of an appeal process to LUBA, Land Use Board of Appeals, but remains silent relative to the liability for appeal costs. Is this the neighboring city, the county, or the committee forming the committee? If the proponents of a new city have costs and this new city is not supported on appeal, paying such costs would be difficult. And I think in that standpoint that if a neighboring city appeals, the commissioner's ruling that yes, a new city would be fine, and the neighboring city wins their appeal, the proponents of the new city are going to have some costs, and if you're not going to be able to form a city, going before LUBA, you can't look at anything under $10,000.
Okay, Representative Schrader, and then I'm going to open up to the committee to ask some questions. You've heard his comments. A
couple of comments. It may indeed be that this does not impact Oak Grove as Mr. Jones has testified, and that's fine. I mean, that's the goal here was to really allow for self-determination more on the fringes. That was the original intent of the proposal. And I think it needs that intent. The goal is indeed to make sure that the densities are comparable. I would point out that there are several jurisdictions around Oak Grove, and I don't think that the requirement would preclude including them in that same type of mix. But if the community wanted to develop at a very low density, that is correct, it would not be able to do so. I don't think the bill, as currently written, does address the growth situation. I think what we're talking about is fringe cities. We had testimony from the Beaver Creek people and from the Merlin people that are outside of Grants Pass that were part of the work group, that they were fine with the idea of developing two comparable densities. And the term is left vague on purpose to allow there to be a little give and take in this process. I think the other key point in the discussion is that the counties are okay with the appeal process, and quite frankly, it does prevent, I think, the veto situation from becoming an absolute, and that's kind of important for anybody to allow for that discussion and that dialogue to move forward. So, one of the last points I made, Mr. Jones rightly referred to the conundrum with the economic feasibility study vis-a-vis the veto. And I think there might be some misunderstanding on his part of the bill. It actually does correct that by taking out Section 4. You know, there is that absolute veto beforehand. What we have here is a process, a stepwise process, where you have the people come in with their petition, they've discussed a little bit with the neighboring city, and they get to do the economic feasibility study. And the economic feasibility study has certain requirements to be in it. So they get to that point, and then after that, that's when the city, the neighboring city that pre-exists the proposed one, gets to make its case, well, geez, I've seen the study. I don't think it's a good idea. I'm not inclined to go there. So it allows that feasibility study process to go forward, which I think, and I agree with Mr. Jones, is so important so that the people can get the money from the various resource groups that are out there and inclined.
Okay, and let's give members of the committee a chance to ask some questions if you need to.
Sure. My only question is that we're in the last meeting of this committee. If the bill takes amendments, I doubt that they'll be prepared.
Yeah.
I think my suggestion would be that we need to deal with the Oak Grove situation at a different point. We just go forward with the Urban Reserve area and the rural and incorporated communities. I'd be glad to work with Mr. Jones and the sheriff, he's inclined, and deal with that.
Pretty challenging to try to do something at this stage of the game. I don't know. Senator Sharon, do you have any questions on this one so far?
Nope, I just support the bill.
Support the bill. Senator Shields, I've been giving you for the last minute here. I don't know.
You know, one of the fun things about running from committee to committee is to see all kinds of things happening in these last days. And I just saw a bill come out of Human Services where they said, you know, we can't do amendments now, it's too late. But let's do this bill, and let's talk to the other side and make sure that they don't concur, so that we can have a conference committee and fix it there. So, you know, everything's been tried. I don't even know what the bill is at this point.
Well, that's one way of doing it. We have no amendment. No, we have no amendment. I'm a bit frustrated. Kurt briefed me a bit on the Representative Schroeder briefed me a bit on the bill the other day, and I just heard from Mr. Jones before the meeting.
Sure. Mr. Jones do apply basically to one situation. This bill has a broader application to that. Is there any other opposition to the bill if it is? That was for that because of that work. And what about the NOVA House floor? The traders that explain the NOVA
work. Do my best anyway. The no votes were based, I think, on the Stafford Basin area, and there was concern that they would want to develop that area as opposed to keep it as farmland. And I guess I would suggest that if they could meet the criterion here, yes, they would be able to incorporate versus keep it as farmland. It doesn't preclude any of the process from going forward.
Any of the major land use planning policies?
Absolutely not. The DLCD is okay with this. Metro, Fountain Friends,
Farm Bureau,
League of Oregon Cities, especially Oregon Counties. It's hard to meet everyone's concerns. I would just point out, with all due respect, this doesn't adversely, well, my opinion certainly, really adversely affect. We're talking about an additional benefit to include in another session or whatever. This is a specific
situation. Let me ask a question, Kurt. Maybe I'm being a little defensive of my own neighborhood, okay? And I'm not a player in this at this particular point, okay? So I've not gotten involved whether we should have a city or should not have a city, okay? That's not where I am at all. And I don't know if there are other areas that might be in similar situations, but, you know, out of respect for my constituency, I'm a little bit concerned at this last minute. What would happen? What all are you supposed to be holding up during the next 2 years if we were to wait and get this on an early agenda next time so we're not doing this, for example, the last day? And I'm always nervous the last day stuff, and that's where I'm...
I appreciate the chair's concern and certifying the issues. I would ask the same question. The problem I would see, quite honestly, is we do have one community, possibly several others, that are in need of moving forward. They've been trying to move forward for the past 2 years, and have been held up because of the current statute. And so they need, frankly, to be able to move forward. We are under statutory authority to start taking these urban reserves into the Metropolitan Urban Growth Boundary. And the community has a window of opportunity here to start to shape their own destiny within certain criteria or not.
Okay, Mr. Jones, you are, let me reverse the question a little bit. Probably within the next 2 years, you're not going to be moving that fast. What would happen if this bill went forward? Because it seems all of a sudden we have everybody for a bill, and it's so rare. When you have, you know, I mean, when you look at the players before this bill, it's makes me wonder. But anyhow, I'm hesitant to hold it back for this, and then you're gambling that the next session, and I can assure you I do plan to be here, I'll deal with your issue and get it on as a priority to take care of the concern that deals with Oak Grove and maybe other areas that might be in the same boat. Timeline, what does that do to you?
Well, I think as far as the timeline, I think there's a lot of pressure in Oak Grove building right now. And I'll have to say that I'm not supporting annexation at this point. I'm supporting giving the area choice. And in fact, I got a packet, but I've been so engrossed in my construction project that I haven't had a chance to spend a lot of time on it. But I know that Oak Lodge Sanitary is, again, discussing with the city of Milwaukee some kind of a merger, and I know that the last time this was voted on, about 15 years ago, it went down 82 to 18, and from the sentiment that people in the community council have, it probably would go down about the same today. But again, there's this ongoing discussion. So if 2 years go by, and we're getting closer to signing Senate Bill 122 from 1993 agreements, ORS 195 agreements, and the bigger sticking point of that is governance. Who is going to govern the area of Oak Grove? And how do you write this into the ORS 195 agreements that are required before the county's next comp plan? I was on the Son of 122 committee that has come back with some mixed ideas to the different governance in the north end of the county.
Well,
if nothing else, may I say this. Perhaps in addition to putting these nice words in to talk about rural communities, urban reserves, maybe the current 3 mile rule should be just left alone in addition to that. Because with the current, if we adopt this, we the state of Oregon adopt this, we will be left that we will only go by this and not the 3 mile rule or any other rule. And this says you can only have cities around urban reserves and rural unincorporated areas. This is going to preclude large areas. And our area has over $1 billion of assessed value. It has 35,000 people.
Is there anyone else here to testify on this particular bill? This was going to be a quick tap kind of a session this afternoon. It's turning out to be something that I can't deal with. Anyone else to testify? Yes. And just quickly. Yeah, Phil, you're from the League of Oregon Cities.
My name is Phil Fell, League of Oregon Cities. I would say that, indeed, the purpose of the bill is to focus on fringe areas, and I think that's where the focus should be confined. I think we would probably not be supportive if the area within urban growth boundary was added in.
If it was what?
If you added in the area within the urban growth boundary rather
like
than...
You would not be supported if Oak Grove were...
That's correct.
...were exempted or covered by
correct.
The state.
Like the bill as it is.
The bill as it is, we think, is okay. It gives people who live out away from others and in sense in a geographical community of their own, an opportunity to consider whether they want to form their own city. I think the test for forming a city is high. If you vote to form a city, you also vote to adopt the tax base. And I think people are going to be extraordinarily surprised when they see how much basic services cost. But I see circumstances different within the urban growth plan.
Yes, sure.
I think Mr. Jones referred to the annex 10 at the 122 process. I do have a separate bill that is being pondered by the Speaker right now, House Bill 3154. It deals with the double majority annexation thing, and I think I am very interested in working that bill also. So it's a lot of, I think, concerns where some other city could outvote you and take you in, and that is a big concern. So I share a concern on that. We could work that angle with that other bill.
Committee members, comments.
I'm sensing that this committee is prepared to move the bill, and I have some discomfort in that, but I. Okay. No, I will. I'm going to. Is anyone else have any other comments? Okay, I'm closing the public hearing on 2463. I'll open a work session on
2463.
I'm 2463
to
the floor.
Did
you
have any amendments?
No.
Did you pass?
Okay, any discussion?
I'm following you guys because I haven't had time to think.
Well, yeah, I'm not in a position to give you any guidance on. I'm frustrated. I wish I knew better. Any other discussion?
Just a moment, Senator.
Yes.
Except you will be back, and you can follow through this year.
Yeah, I could do that.
I think it's usable, and I think it'll work. It's very controversial in the House. So. Mm-hmm. If you're okay, I'm okay.
Discussion?
We have a sidebar.
The sidebar. Okay. Any other discussion?
No.
Okay. Clerk, can call the roll.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm going to vote no, just because of the how I just don't know how it affects that whole area. Okay. Motion carries. House Bill 2463 will be sent to the floor with a due pass recommendation. And just as a low explanation, I guess I will try to be working with our people to see what might be able to do. Because I do understand it's probably one of the biggest areas, unincorporated areas that you'll find. It's see how many people we have in that area. What's the population of that area? It's yes, Dick. 34,000 people. Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you, Representative. Okay.
You
want to carry it? Oh. You want to carry it?
Yeah.
All right. Senator Shannon will carry the bill. Frank?
We got one more
in the night. All right. Yes. Oh, yes. Yeah. Well, I'm going to open a... closing the work session on 2463. Opening the work session on Senate Bill 2892.
Chair.
Yes, Senator Crowe. I'm
going to suspend the rules for the purpose of reconsidering the vote on SB 2892.
The motion is to suspend the rules for the purpose of reconsidering the vote on Senate Bill 2892. Is there any discussion?
Who knows why we're
doing it? Do you want to explain why you're doing this?
I don't know why we're doing it.
Would you please, Marjorie, would you please?
Chair Duncan, members of the committee, we adjusted the -812 amendment to this bill at our last meeting, and afterwards we found out that there was a conflict with that amendment. The -813 amendments that you will be adopting at this time resolve that conflict.
Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm. So, Chair, I move that we reconsider this week. I can see
up. Now, for the clerk, please call the roll.
Yes.
Hi.
Senator Shields.
Hi.
Senator
Hi.
Mr. Chair, I move we
roll.
I move reconsider the vote by which SB 2892 was sent to the floor that it passed as amended recommendation.
The motion is to reconsider the vote by which Senate Bill 2892 was sent to the floor that it be passed as amended recommendation. Is there any discussion?
We need to amend the bill.
Oh, that sounds logical enough. Will the clerk please call the roll?
Aye.
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 Sheriff, yes, Clinton.
I move that we adopt the A-13 amendment to Senate Bill 2892.
It's a move that we adopt the A-13 amendment. Is there any discussion?
Sheriff, yes. We send Senate Bill 2892 as amended to the floor of the Senate. We're doing a show.
Moves we send Senate Bill 2892 as amended to the floor of the Senate's recommendation. Any discussion? Clerk will call the roll.
Aye.
We're okay. If you can't trust your fellow legislators, who could you trust?
Well, that brought
when it's a Presbyterian talking about breweries, I don't know.
I want a I'm looking for a Methodist minister's response. Okay. The Methodist minister is all for brewing.
Hi. It's a good thing you and I on this one.
House Bill 2892 will be sent to the amendment will be sent to the floor with due pass recommendations. Senator Shields will carry.
No, I won't.
Okay, I'm going to have to wait.
I don't think you want me carrying this one. After I have time to study it.
And would someone please notify the bishop to be in the gallery that day? All right, I'm going to open a... some of you testify, I'm sorry you have to wait, but I do have a group I've got to get on the road, and I'm going to open a... a public hearing on Senate Bill 229. I guarantee you folks, this will be quick. If it isn't, don't come up.
This
group has its act together, I understand.
Yeah, members of the committee, yes we do. The last time we were before you, you had three bills and even more points of view. I'm Steve Walton, the chair of the Racing Commission, and with me is Steve Barham, the executive director of the Racing Commission. Since we were before you last, Commissioner Talbot has held meetings with all of the interested groups and has achieved a consensus on what you have as bill, as Senate Bill 229.
That's why we have this group coming forward, and I've told them I want nothing but heads nodding yes, okay?
The heads are nodding, and I'm also pleased to inform the committee that...
Tom, right there.
I'm also pleased to inform the committee that at our meeting earlier this afternoon, the Racing Commission approved an application for racing at the State Fair this summer, so there will be a race meet this summer at the State Fair. We had submitted some written testimony regarding this bill, what it does, but it is a consensus bill.
Randy, come on up to sit over here. Let's see on that.
I don't know if Commissioner Talbot has put on the desk, has anything to add, but I do want to stress to the committee that it was his work that has this consensus bill before you today.
I walked in time to see the heads nod. That's really the only reason I came.
Well,
it's not often that you see this group of people nod in unison on an issue. And Senator Scott, it was your comment during the last committee meeting that maybe some of these high-priced lobbyists could work out a deal. Well,
we're pleased with them.
Yes, we are pleased with them.
Couldn't we have them hold hands?
Rob, why aren't you up here, Chelsea? Okay. I really do want to commend all of you because I know you all had to give and didn't get exactly what you want. But probably I think you recognize if you didn't, you wouldn't get anything. So we hope that something good comes out of this. And any other questions of the committee of the witnesses? Thank you very much. Close the public hearing on... Did anyone else want to testify on 229? Anyone else want to testify on this bill? I'm opening a work session. Before a work session?
I would like to know what they did. So, will you please tell us the content?
Yes. That's probably a...
Briefly, yes. Basically, what did you do? And then it's going to be racing up.
Well, the bill before you, or the amendments, the Dash 6 amendments, do a couple of things. First, it gives the Racing Commission the regulatory authority to authorize out-of-state simulcasting, either under the status quo situation where we have windows, or to go to breed to breed, but only with the consensus of the consent of the two major tracks. Breed to breed has something of a mythical reputation within the racing industry. Most of the people who have in racing have been on one side or the other of breed to breed in any one time over the last 3 years. So it's a constantly shifting sand. I think with the agreement that we have, the resolution we passed today at the Racing Commission meeting to dedicate the first of the revenues from the hub to the fairs, we can now eliminate that those events from this discussion and sit down and have a discussion within the industry about whether breed to breed is the way to go. We're not going to impose breed to breed on the industry unilaterally. We want them to do that on their own, as long as we have the authority to approve it once that they do agree. There are some very, very thorny issues having to do with breed to breed. So we want to approach it from a regulatory point of view rather than a legislative one.
Is it possible to get rid of that?
I believe it is, but not without the consensus of one of both major tracks. And the second one, I'll let Steve Barr explain that to you. It has to do with the licensing of off-track racing sites.
For the record, my name is Steve Barr. I'm the executive director of the Oregon Racing Commission. Presently, the Racing Commission approves off-track sites through the race meet license application. This would change the legislation so that we'd actually license the off-track site. There's no fiscal impact to it. We're not charging any fee. It's one simply in jurisdiction and being able to regulate those sites better rather than having to come back against a racetrack if there's a problem there.
Questions? Okay. Okay. Thank you. Well, I will officially close the public hearing on Bill 229, and I'll open a work session on Senate Bill 229.
That's
true. Senator Trill.
I move the amendment. Whatever.
Well, yes, excuse me. That's right. That's it.
Mm-hmm. I move the Dash 6.
Senator Trill moves the Dash 6 amendments to Senate Bill 229. Any discussion? Amendments are adopted.
Chair, I move the bill to go before.
Mm-hmm.
It is closed. I move for the pass recommendation.
As amended. Okay. Senate Trill moves Senate Bill 229 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion. Clerk will call the roll.
Senator Shields.
Aye.
Senator
Shields. Aye. Aye. Motion carried. Senate Bill 229 is amended. Will be sent to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay.
Senator Shields, did you want to carry this one too? Is it the same day the bishop's there?
Alcohol and gambling?
No, I don't think so. You regret having asked me to carry the original.
Anybody else? The sense of trouble carrying it. Okay. All right. Thank you, folks. And I really do appreciate the work that you folks have done. Oh, wait. We have another racing bill. Okay. I'm going to open the public hearing on House Bill 3425. Everyone's looking at each other. I don't know what that means. This is divvying up the money. Okay. Mike Dewey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Mike Newley representing Multnomah Greyhound Park. That would be great. To the point, last session, we had the foresight to pass the legislation. We appreciate your support of the legislation that put in statute in the first state to set in statute the quota or greater hub. And what we are doing this session is, and I will get into a totalizator hub in a moment, but if a hub is located in Oregon, since you have in place now the mechanism to license the hub through the Racing Commission and to regulate it, and monies will be coming into the state, and we also have a 1% or up to 1% tax of the proceeds of the gross receipts from the hub, we thought it appropriate that we would put in statute a formula by which the money could be allocated. Now, we have come to you in the last two sessions with two different pieces of legislation, and I can see Senator Cho when we talked about the vetoes and so forth, and obviously that occurs. And we were trying to figure out a way to mitigate the impact of the lottery and casinos on the racing industry. And we are happy to say that we have some legislation that we think we know if the hub or a hub is located in Oregon, and again I will explain that in a moment. If a hub is located in Oregon, we can use racing dollars to help the racing industry. And so let me just very quickly explain what the hub is. It's nothing that's real mysterious here. It is literally a processing center. The racing industry, because of the competition, is getting together to market their products. And they need economies of scale as you have live racing and simulcasting throughout the United States or across the world for that matter. And because of that, it makes sense to have one or more locations where these wagers are processed. And the folks at the time that own the Greyhound track were involved in the alliance, the tracks that were trying to put this organization together. And in order to put it together and make it work, you first of all have to have a street law to allow something like that to be located in the state. So we were the first to do it. And other states are trying to move along, and Kentucky and California and Maryland and Pennsylvania are looking at similar type of legislation. But literally it would be like a credit card bank, if you will. Taking a wager from another state, having it electronically come into Oregon, take the odds, move the dollars back, if you will, to the host track to set up the pool, if you will. And again, what we can do is we can tax that up to 1%. Now, the Racing Commission, it's my understanding, has an administrative rule to entice an organization to bring the processing center to Oregon. Their rule is that they would initially tax it at 0.25%. And there is a good likelihood that one of the organizations would like to locate, and we've had conversations with the Racing Commission about locating the hub in Oregon. We think that's good because, again, it's racing dollars that could be used. When we sat down and negotiated 229, and as you know, one of the discussions has been about simulcasting and future simulcast. Well, the county fairs were not here, but we have to applaud them because they said, we will move ahead. So what do we get out of it? State fair, we can't simulcast. What do we get out of it? And we said, well, if there is a hub and it comes to Oregon, the first call of the dollars would go to the county fairs and the state fair, and the industry agreed that is the appropriate thing to do. Now, there is no guarantee that the hub will be located in Oregon. You should know that the proponents who want to bring it here, and this is a nice thing to say about Oregon, it's because in part of the high quality of workforce in Oregon, because these are computer-type jobs. These are not manual jobs. These are software, engineering-type jobs.
Does it have something to do with the education system?
Evidently. And we were very happy to hear that, because too often we get criticized about the system, but it was nice to hear that. So what we wanted to do is appropriate the money. Today we are appropriating one-third of nothing to the state and two-thirds of nothing to the racing industry. But down the road it could be a few dollars, And some people said, well, Mike, why did you allocate anything to the state in this? Why not have it all go to the racing industry? And I've been criticized a little bit about that, but it seemed appropriate to me, and I think to others.
Gambling addiction.
And so that is what the hub does, and we have an agreement that the first call on the dollars will go to the county fair and the state fair to run race meets. And hopefully there are additional dollars down the line to help the facilities compete. Portland Meadows needs to upgrade their facilities. But if your channel's going like that, it's kind of difficult to do it. The owner of Multnomah Greyhound Park is going to contribute about $4 million to upgrade. They're doing it because they believe there's a future. Portland Meadows believes there's a future. Some of these monies might be used to increase purses, to increase marketing and those kind of things to allow us to compete a little bit better. But that's down the road. But 3425 is very critical, we think, to the whole puzzle that we've talked about so far today.
I have a question.
That's from Shannon.
You know, Nevada is so far ahead of us. I wonder why they haven't put this hub together for us.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean that.
I said, Nevada is so far ahead of us in gambling and living off of gambling, and if there's a profit in this hub, I wonder why Nevada hasn't put a hub together.
Senator Duncan and Senator Shannon, that's a very good question. We'll take Churchill Downs and Hollywood Park and the other major tracks, own their product. And I don't believe they want to have any have their product now goes into Nevada. But horse racing head-to-head with casinos doesn't do very well. And so I think the last place they would want to locate a hub is where their major competition is a state that has casino after casino after casino. So you have to have the acquisition, the consent. I could just say cold.
Oh, yes.
That's a cold. You have to have the consent of the various tracks, and I don't believe that they could sit down and say that is the best location. So that's why it would be.
Who's going to pay for the hub when it's put here?
Senator Duncan and Senator Trow, again, the major tracks across the country are the individuals that could have made the investment, and they will pay for that. The Racing Commission regulates, if you will, the integrity of it to make sure that everything works the way it's supposed to.
And realistically, what are our chances of getting that?
Senator Duncan and Senator Trow, they're actually very good.
Okay.
Senator Duncan and Senator Trow so often like how businesses get located in certain places. Some of the principals like Oregon, have been to Oregon, and have an affinity for Oregon. So that is one of the reasons. Although California, Kentucky, obviously a horse state would like it, there could be more than one hub down the road, and that could be located in another state. But right now we are the front runner. There's some people that believe it will happen fairly soon. I'm not going to make those predictions today.
If I hear you correctly, we're not at any cost to the state.
Senator,
but we're talking about the possibility of receipts from the state, to the state.
Senator Duncan and Senator Trow, there's no infrastructure costs, no construction costs. There would be, though, the regulatory oversight. Because you do have wagers that are coming in and going out, you need to make sure that that is regulated so you have the integrity of the business.
But it pays for itself.
That will pay for it, yes. Through the licensing
itself. Through the licensing.
And the Racing Commission has had discussions with the principals about how to go through all of these processes. So so they're not overtaxed, if you will.
So the bill does what for the hub?
The hub is already authorized. The 1% maximum is already authorized. Very simply, it takes the proceeds from a hub that we're located, and 1/3 goes to the state general fund.
It divides up the
rightful
body.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And 1/3 to the state general fund.
And 2/3 to the county fairs.
Well, it's to the racing industry, to the Racing Commission for the benefit of racing. But there's an
agreement. It'll be the state fair and the county fairs.
Yes.
Doesn't
seem to be a little precipitate to divide up the terms before we have the thing.
You've got to try to divide it up after you have the money.
we're not used to being like that situation.
Senator Duncan and Senator Stroh, we might add that one could argue that 100% of the proceeds go to the Racing Commission.
She didn't argue.
We're not arguing. Because obviously we're trying to pass a bill.
The Racing Commission is okay with this one.
Okay. The
Racing Commission just gave a thumbs up. Okay, any other questions? Senator Shields, did you have any questions for them before I send them away? Okay. Is there anyone else? Is there anyone else? I ask for a little decorum. We have guests here. I don't want to get a wrong impression of this committee. All right. Okay. Anyone else wish to testify on this bill? I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3425, and I'm going to open up the session on House Bill 3425. Senator Trill moves House Bill 3425 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Clerk will call the roll.
Aye.
Aye. House Bill 3425 is carried. Will be sent to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Do I have a? I'll carry it. I think we need a Presbyterian balancing off the Methodist. You've already talked to the Secretary of State.
Okay.
Once again, we've had people come in. I would like to explain to people this is a. If you're not used to what's going on down here, today is the last day for this committee. Tomorrow's the last day for most committees. And it's a catch-up. It's just crash-bang. And people are having to run out to testify on other bills and other committees. And so you find people running in and out of here. And so it's confusing today. Today we have an excuse for confusion. Okay, at this point, I am going to... our Secretary of State is here. I'm going to open a public hearing on... I'm going to open the work session on 2212A, and I'm asking our Secretary of State to join us for a moment, okay?
Senator Duncan, members of the committee...
Good afternoon. It's nice to have you with us.
Good afternoon.
Phil Keesling. Can you identify yourself for your record here?
Phil Keesling, Secretary of State. This committee has been working on House Bill 2212 and asked us to prepare the -4 amendments, which we have before you. There are three choices about what to do with the bill. One, of course, is to do nothing and keep the corporate fees exactly the way they are. The A4 amendment would take a large variety of fees and reduce them to 3 major fees, but do it in a revenue-neutral fashion, i.e., would still generate the same amount of revenue for the 2001-03 biennium. And the original bill would reduce the fees to a single fee and would have a revenue reduction impact as the bill was originally presented. We certainly will, but not for this biennium, exactly, the 2001-03 biennium. I think this committee has heard testimony about the idea behind this bill, and I won't belabor the point, but I did want to urge the committee to stick with the original idea embodied in the bill. I certainly understand there are good and reasonable arguments where people might be concerned about reducing the general fund revenue, even though that effect is not until 2103, because of the need to fund various programs and the like. But I think this is a basic philosophical question as to whether a program that does, I think, an excellent job. We've gone from 61 to 45 people in the corporation's division in the last 8 years. We are providing, I believe, better service. We have over 100,000 corporations registered, and I think most of those are sole proprietorships now, and self-employed folks. And the fees that we generate are far in excess of what it means to actually run the division and make strategic investments in infrastructure technology. We have a good deal above and beyond all of that. And I think at a time when the credibility of government is under assault in so many quarters, when people are prone to believe the worst, that this is an example of where we can, in a sense, push back and demonstrate that we can not only give people a better service, and we've got plans afoot to put all this on the web so people can, in a sense, register as businesses just that way. Better service, lower cost, and the fees don't have to be as high. And granted, the fees even now are some of the lowest in the Western states. This would reduce them even further. But I think it is a very strong and powerful and positive signal to send that we believe the fees ought to match what is required to run the operation. And hence, we did offer the A4 amendments, which gives this committee another alternative. But I believe strongly that the original concept is the preferred way to go. I'd be happy to answer any questions here as well.
Yes, I do want to commend you for the work that you're doing and coming forward asking for a reduction in fees, because that doesn't generally, it's the other way around. So I certainly would commend that. Yes, did you want to add something?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Tom Rouse, Secretary of State Corporation Division. I'm here mostly as a technical advisor.
Okay, good. So we have before us the original bill.
Yes. The reduction in general fund revenue was not part of the governor's budget, and that led our president to some concern. I think it checks with the governor now. I think we've made it revenue neutral for the fund, right? So there's no loss.
The original bill, correct, is revenue neutral for 9901.
And so, you know, the governor has to be concerned, you don't, but the governor has to be concerned for the next biennium as well, having enough money to go around. And the decisions we're making this time, I think, really do affect that. And so, hey, you haven't checked with the governor.
Senator, I have personally not checked lately, but at the beginning of the session when we pre-session filed this bill, I sat down with his chief of staff and let him know how we were designing it, and we purposely designed it to have the choice be one that would not affect the 9901, but would wait until the 0103. And they had
thought it.
Exactly, and they thought that was fine.
Okay. You're comfortable with the original bill?
I have a question.
Yes, yeah. Yeah.
You're recommending we stay with the original bill?
Correct.
And the amendments would... for a long time, and you just...
Well, not for long, would it be...
Senator Shannon, members of the committee, the A4 amendments would move back in the direction of having the fees higher than they need to be.
Okay, that's
to do the service. And
make it real simple for me, okay?
All right.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay, so your recommendation is 2212A as it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, are we in work session?
We are in work session. Okay, Senator Troll moves House Bill 2212A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion?
I just want to thank him.
Okay.
Good job.
Thank you very much. Good job. Please call the roll.
Aye.
House Bill 2212A will be sent to the floor with a due pass recommendation. And the carry, I'm going to carry this reduction.
you just don't
get to look good very often, and boy, it's a drag to be in the chair around here, let me tell you. Have the Methodist minister carry the brewery bills, and I get to carry the tax reduction. Okay. Now, I think I'm going to move back to, I'm going to move back here to, this is going to be group here. I'm going to reconvene the public hearing, the work session, public hearing on Health Bill 3623. My Department of Veterans Services. Is John here? He didn't expect me to. Tell him if he doesn't hurry and get here, we may get his bill passed without him. If I can just remind people at this stage of the game, the less said, I think the quicker you'll find your bill getting passed. So on that basis, Mr. Hughes.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Ed Hughes, Coalition for Veterans Issues.
Are you for the bill?
We are for the bill.
Thank you very much.
I have Mr. Frank Blair, who is a Vietnam veteran, here with me, and we just want to reiterate the testimony that was given by Representative Sinceri and say we support the bill.
Okay, let's let you say it too, sir.
And my name is Frank Blair, and I'm the legislative coordinator for the Oregon State Council of Vietnam Veterans of America, and we support this bill very strongly.
Very good. Very good. Should we show the director of Veterans we can move ahead without him?
Yes.
I'm going to close the public hearing, and I'm going to open the work session on House Bill 3623. And if he tells you he's got this bill through, so I know he did. He was out of the room. No, I'm sorry.
I move House Bill 3623 to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
So Mr. Shannon moves House Bill 3623 to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Discussion. Sounds good.
Well, there he is.
Trying to think it's going to make it without you. Do you want to open up and take a chance? You might fail. When you got a good thing going, you better stick with it. As our Methodist minister says, you need to know when to hold and when to fold. Sounds like a poker concept to me. Any other discussion? Clerk will call the roll.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. House Bill 3623 is carried and will be sent to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
I'd like to carry
it. Senator Shannon would like to carry the bill.
Okay.
Closing the work session. Thank you folks very much for being with us today and bearing with us. And please, this isn't the way laws are always made, okay? Okay, let me see. Who was I dealing with first and left them hanging? Okay, I'm going back. We'll reopen the work session on 3429. Is there anyone else who wants to testify on that bill?
Well, I'll let you know. Chair Duncan, members of the committee, 3429, we have a conflict amendment to this. It's the dash 3 amendment, and that's just exactly what we need at this point.
Well, Mr. Chair. Yes.
In work session?
Yes. We are in the rush. We are in work session, I'm sorry. Senator Phil moves the dash 3 amendments.
Three?
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to tell us once again what the dash 3?
Sure. Sure, Duncan, members of the committee. This 3429 is the measure that would permit more than one winery license on a single location. And the conflict amendments were related to the cider issue. Apparently there was a conflict with the OLCC licensing bill, so we resolved this bill conflict. And this amendment also adds an emergency clause to the bill so that the people who are working in the industry can actually do this as well.
You just afraid the cider will. What cider do?
From that,
we don't, so that's why the emergency call.
Yeah.
Yes, question?
I move the dash 3.
Senator Trump moves the dash 3 amendment. In what session? 3429.
Okay. Any questions? The dash 3
amendments are adopted. Senator Stroll moves 3429 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Is there?
I have a question.
Yes.
Wait a minute. Does that mean we don't need these? All right. No questions.
No questions?
Dash 3 is the right amendment.
Right. Yeah. No other discussion? All right. Let's call the roll.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Yeah, but not for the minister made it
back. Yes. House Bill 3429 will be sent to Senate with due pass recommendation. Sherry, something. So who carried the bill? I don't want you to be on too much on that time. So. Okay, I think I'll. I'm going to go on a work session on House Bill 2734A. You want to explain it to us here?
Chair, back to members of the committee. House Bill 2774A is related to the filing of plats for the county's clerk. And we had Charles Stern last time testified before us. And at that time, we did not have the amendment ready for that bill. We do now, and it's the -AA. And it just clarifies little issues that were neglected in the health amendments as well.
Using more digital and...
Digital, and the county clerk also has to approve the method.
Sure, I'm moving amendment.
Senator Trump moves the -8 amendment. Any discussion? Amendment adopted. Senator Trump moves 2774 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion. Clerk will call the roll.
Aye.
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 Aye. House Bill 2774 is amended to be sent to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Carriers.
Yes.
Senator Schultz will carry the bill. Posting work session on 2774A, opening a public hearing on House Bill 3581. Did anyone want to testify on the bill? I know you had a concern. The county clerk's got it. When my current county clerk and my former county clerk, the end of the county are here, I listen carefully. And Barbara, I'll listen to you too. Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Charles Stern, and I'm the Yamhill County Clerk. I'm chair of the Oregon Association of County Clerks, Legislative Committee on Land Records, and with me, Barbara Thompson, from the Oregon Land Title Association. I had prepared, and I don't know if the administrator supplied and shared a section by section of the bill, because it does lots of things as it moves through it. But there's three major issues that this bill addresses. One is a kind of a policy decision that's in Section 1, dealing with the clerk may not record an issue conveying property to the state or a political subdivision without that subdivision's acceptance on the face of it. Current law does that now for dedications of property for public purposes, but it doesn't deal with conveyances. So if I wanted, if I had an old piece of ground out there that has some perhaps waste that nobody wants, it doesn't prevent me from doing a quick claim deed, going in and recording that to the any political subdivision. What this says is the clerk's not going to accept that unless there's evidence that that political subdivision is accepted. So it makes it in line with what's already happening with dedications. So that's kind of, that's number one.
And this is something the title people are probably... that.
For the record, we have no objection to that.
Hey, that's number one. Number two, we go through and change a bunch of phrases. It talks about books. It talks about that we're going to keep things in different books. Even talks about on these pages it's going to have certain columns. Well, in today's world, where you do a lot more stuff in computers. And so we've kind of gone through the statutes, and hopefully we've updated that language and adjusted that so we're not putting in books, we're putting in the records, maintaining the records. And most of us microfilm our documents, and so that's how we're using it. So we're just modernizing some phraseology. Number three, again, a policy decision. So number one's a policy. Number two is some cleanup omnibus type thing. Number three is a policy issue. Creates a county clerk's records fund. Now, this does not increase any fees.
but it says whenever the legislature establishes a fee that's in addition to the recording fee, 5% of that should go into a dedicated fund for the acquisition and maintenance of storage and retrieval systems and the cost of collecting that fee. Now, over on the House side, Commerce has been pushing us to do more electronic recordings and filing. And in fact, the Senate Judiciary passed out a bill, Senate Bill 81, which provides that municipal courts and JP courts can file their liens electronically with an agreement with the clerk. We don't have systems to handle that. We're interested. Moving down that line, and what this would do is by creating a separate fund, it allows fund monies to be able to accumulate so you can afford to do it. Under our current analysis, it would not raise a sufficient amount of money in many counties to be able to do anything year one. But over time, you could do something.
I was curious about that same thing, Charles. Just a smaller county, Wheeler County, for example, is this even going to help them much?
It would take several years. But again, now Wheeler County probably will not do electronic recording. But they may need a flat cabinet, which is a lot less amount of money, or a PC. So it's kind of scalable to your needs. How many documents does Wheeler County record in a year? Very few. So they're not going to have the same needs that the Pike County area has, where they're doing, you know, hundreds of thousands of recordings a year. It's a whole different problem. The Pike County will generate a lot more money, but they have a significant more need.
Would it be possible? I'm just not trying to micromanage South counties. I'm pretty familiar. You take Wheeler, Gillian, Sherman counties, for example. Could three counties go in together and disjoint? I know they'd have to maintain access at the local level, but could that be done, or is any of that work kind of thing being done currently?
Mr. Chair, there have been discussions about having a service, kind of like a service bureau consortium, and that has occurred east of the mountains in a number of areas, in software development for assessment taxation, software development for voter registration. There was a consortium, and they developed some stuff on IBM, 36 and migrated the AS400, and it was done through a consortium. So yes, that has been done in some instances, some of the smaller counties.
Okay.
So anyway, those are the three issues that when you go through all these pages, it kind of deals with. An issue that we had a chat about this morning is an issue in Section 8 of the bill where we talked about the way the bill reads is except as otherwise provided by law, the deeds executed with state, lands or any interest therein to be signed by grantors and shall be acknowledged before, and then it lists judge of the Supreme Court, county judge, justice, and other republic. And the question that's kind of come up between the Land Title Association and us in the last couple of days is what is the intent of that? The intent from the Clerks Association was that we're talking about who shall do the acknowledgement rather than when does the conveyance occur or how it's conveyed. And that was our intent. And that was kind of the question that had come up between the Land Title Association and the Clerks in the last couple of days.
They brought that to my attention this afternoon, but because of our real conceptual amendments at this point, I think you're going to have to, if you want us to send it to rules, and maybe you'll never see it again, or if you want to take your chances with a shall instead of the may, and if you want to get it correct next time, go ahead. So I think at this point, from what I've heard, you're willing to go with the shall. Is that it?
So Mr. Chair,
you're okay with this bill. You just would like to see it changed or kind of late to the day.
That's kind of, we would have changed the word in chapter consultation with the land title from back to May, like it is currently in the statute. But that conceptual amendment has been decided that we won't do. Mm-hmm. And so we'll move forward and deal with it.
The bill is pretty good on that.
Just that one.
Yes.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Barbara Collins on behalf of Oregon Land Title Association. First, we apologize for raising this issue so late, but we, as long as it's clear for the record that that is the intent, that we don't want the bill not to pass.
Right. We want to get it on the record today at least. Yeah.
And I think also you have some conceptual amendments to this bill.
Chair Duncan, members of the committee, we have some conflict amendments to the bill. That's -84 that you hopefully have before you.
They're in the amendments, yeah. Oh, yeah. Scared me for a minute. But that's
that we need.
Yes, but I just in my mind.
No, we need this. We need this.
Okay, anything else like that? Okay, I'm going to close the. Anyone else want to testify on the sale? John, you're okay? Okay. I'm going to close the public hearing on 3581 and open the work session on 3581. Senate Patrol moves the conflict amendment at the dash 4. Any discussion? Comments are adopted. Senate Patrol moves House Bill 3581 as A, as amended to the form of the due pass recommendation. Discussion. Clerk will call the roll.
Aye.
Senate Bill 3581 will be sent as amended. Will be sent A as amended. Will be sent before the due pass recommendation.
I need to get these four people that have been
moved. You're next. I'm sorry. Okay.
Oh,
San Francisco.
Yes,
we're moving. We're going to make it. You have to leave right away, too, don't you?
Yeah.
You have another meeting. Okay. I'm going to reopen the hearing on 2894 and thank Ken and his crowd for your patience and perseverance again. It's terrible to keep you waiting like that.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Ken Armstrong. I'm here today representing the International City Management Association Retirement Trust, also known as ICMA. We're bringing this bill before you. You've already heard Representative Shetterly talk about this bill. It did pass unanimously with one no vote on the House side. We're asking you to support this bill this morning or this afternoon. What we're really talking about here is an equity issue. The ICMA operates a deferred compensation trust that currently, due to an anomaly in the statute, needs to maintain a surety bond or a fidelity bond in the amount of 100% of the plan's assets. This is not consistent with federal standards for similar deferred compensation trusts, and it's also not consistent with the private annuity industry, and we're looking to have this brought back down into a level of equity. It is a big difference. We understand why the 100% was set up originally. We don't know the answer to that. It was just an anomaly. It was discovered. ICMARC has been successful in getting a 100% bond for its assets in Oregon, which are in the amount of about $65 million, but with some difficulty. Our concern is, and my colleague Greg Settle here from ICMA is going to be testifying briefly on this as well, is that if their assets climb much higher than that, it's going to be very unlikely they'll be able to get a surety bond at all, thereby resulting in the program not being offered anymore to public employees in Oregon. I passed out to you a list of the larger employees that offer the ICMA program as an optional deferred comp program, and with that, I will turn it over to Greg Settle.
Thank you very much, Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Greg Settle. I'm the Territory Director for the ICMA Retirement Corporation here in the Northwest. And we've been serving the public employees in the state of Oregon since the early 70s with a program that the participants truly enjoy and appreciate. This situation we became aware of early last year and then met that fidelity bonding requirement, but were informed by the insurance industry. At first they couldn't believe what we were asking for, and then they said we can do this, but only so far, and then it's just simply not going to be available. And as Ken has pointed out, in the rest of the industry, the financial services industry, this level of fidelity bonding is simply unheard of. And we would really appreciate, and I think the participants throughout the state would appreciate being allowed to continue to provide this program to them.
I'm Steve Bryan. I'm city manager in Albany, and we participate in the ICMARC program. We have two deferred comp providers, and this statute treats them differently and actually penalizes this particular provider because of the way that they're structured. By approving this bill, it will bring more parity between the different providers in the state of Oregon. ICMARC is a public entity organized as a trust under the auspices of the International City Managers Organization.
So we support this bill. We think it's a housekeeping thing that needs to happen. The practical effect of not passing this bill potentially could mean that we lose the equity investment opportunities that we enjoy in this program, and we would be limited to some fixed type return investments, which would put them at a severe disadvantage with their other competitors in the state of Oregon.
And Mr. Chair, I might add one final thing, that this proposal has been run by the Treasurer's Office and also DCDS, and it's passed muster with their shot.
Okay. Questions for the witnesses? I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2894 and open up the session on 2894.
The bill is ready as
ready as zero. Senator Carroll moves House Bill 2894 to the floor with a due press recommendation. Discussion. Clerk will call the roll.
No.
Aye.
Senator
Crowe?
Aye.
Chair Duncan? Aye. House Bill 2894 is carried. Will be sent to the floor with a due pass recommendations. Anyone like to carry the bill?
Okay.
Senator Crowe will carry the bill.
Senator Shannon, tell me what you voted. No?
Oh, somebody's got some bills he's not listening to, maybe.
Oh.
I don't know.
Okay.
I'm just kidding. I'll vote yes. Yeah. And it's remembered
something. Is that a change of vote?
Sir? That's a change of vote.
Oh, wait, I'll have to read it.
I thought you didn't drop the gavel.
Did I drop the gavel? Did I drop the gavel?
Yeah.
I thought I did. I'm going to reopen the work session for the purpose of the vote change. Senator Shannon, if you want to.
No.
I'm not forcing you. I just want you to say you want to change your vote.
I did. I do. I vote aye.
Senator Shannon votes aye. Motion is one more done. I'm going to close the work session again. And I really want to thank you folks for waiting, and I'm sorry you didn't have a great plan. We do our best. All right. Okay, folks, we're ready to get it right down. We have two great bills. Right now. Oh, wait, we have a quick slide here. On House, I'm going to open a work session on House Concurrent Resolution 8. Would you explain the bill, please?
I'll get the right from Representative Cliff, who's the sponsor of the show. It is related to the Memoir Trail 2000. And at our last hearing related to this bill, there was some question as to what the Memoir Trail is. And Representative Close's office drew up the dash one amendment to consider on that issue. You should have that.
Senator Crowe, you were chairing at that time. I wasn't here. Do you have the defense for the concerns?
Well, what we thought was if we try to bring some square on this, and it's the dash one amendment.
The dash one amendment.
I guess my objection, I'm not going to object to this thing, but it's the resolve that I didn't like, that we members of encourage all citizens to observe Memoir Trail 2000, celebrate the past. Didn't seem to me like we knew what Memoir Trail was exactly. Maybe the whereas explains it.
What is it?
I don't know. That's why I thought maybe that's what they would do.
Is there a trail someplace? Chair Duncan, members of the committee, at the time that Representative Close was testifying on the bill, I think she mentioned that Margaret Ingram is trying to create some sort of book, and she's running around the state collecting stories and memoirs. And
this is the Memoir Trail.
She's creating a Memoir Trail, yes.
So it's not a path up in the air.
It's definitely not a path up in the air.
Okay,
go on. All right, we're either passing the Memoir Trail, which is a path up the wood, or it is a
series of
Okay.
We're in work session.
Yeah, I move it.
Senator Shannon moves House Concurrent Resolution 8.
I move the dash 1 to the train.
Any objections to dash 1?
In other words, we're dashing up the train.
That's right. I think they're carried. Now, I'm ready for the
vote. Yeah, and then she moves it.
Senator Shannon moves House Concurrent Resolution 8 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion. Clerk will call the roll.
Senator
Shannon.
Aye.
Aye. It's Senator Shannon. Will carry.
Senator Shannon.
Aye. Good done. I'm sorry. I guess you call it, don't you? Alright. House Concurrent Resolution 8 is amended. We'll be set to follow the due pass recommendation. Did you want to say
it? Vote explanation.
I could. Maybe Margaret will help me.
Vote explanation.
Yes,
I voted aye, but I'm not sure what I voted for.
Okay. As a historian, I'm sure you can't go wrong. All right, I'm closing the work session on House Concurrent Resolution 8, and now, Phil, you're very patient. Andy and Tom and Annette, would you come?
Oh, that's this.
I believe, okay. All right, we have two bills. So it is only two. I'm going to open a public hearing on 22. 40. So, yes, I think this will go. This should go very rapidly if it could happen. I would like to say to all of the committees that can't wait. Yeah.
Okay. Just tell you what, if they make them in a minute, we'll vote for them.
Okay.
You take my word, this is a good bill.
Sure.
We had them. It's very similar to what we had with House Bills 109, instead of those 109 and 110. They're kind of companions.
Okay.
We'll have a session on 224, House Bill 2240.
Mr. Chair, Annette Talbot, Legislative Coordinator for the Employment Department. With me is Tom Olson, the Child Care Administrator, and Wendy Lutz from the Child Care Commission. Senate Bill, or House Bill 2240, Mr. Chair, you did already adopt in Senate Bill 109. House Bill 2240 is also already in the Governor's budget, which is in the Employment Department budget, Senate Bill 5512. So you've seen the same exact language before, and it's already budgeted. And Mr. Chair, unless there's any questions, I don't think we have anything else to say about House Bill 2240.
Okay. Any questions for them?
Well, okay. I have a question.
Yes.
It says that they can make unannounced visits.
That's right.
Okay. I always thought that if the child comes to say and asks to come in, they can't say we have a reason to believe there's something going on, or you could say, well, I'd rather you not come in at this time. How does this give them, because there's some kind of a constitutional right that you can't come in without a warrant unless you're invited?
Mr. Chair, Senator Shannon, that's absolutely correct. This bill basically gives us the authority to basically go to a home and request to be allowed in, but of course without a warrant. We would, of course, under the Constitution, be required to get a warrant if we requested to have one.
Okay.
But if they don't let you in, I hope you're going to go get a warrant and go in.
Yeah, we do that on a regular
basis. Because the purpose of this is these are child care centers, not an individual.
Right. But even, even child care centers, they have to invite them in. And I wondered how you can get them.
But it just seems to me like we're hoping that they get in there and check these out, because we have some real concerns about what's happening out there. Okay, any other discussion? We're in work session. I am closing the public hearing, opening the next session on House Bill 2240. Moves House Bill 2240 to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Discussion. Clerk will call the roll.
Aye.
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 Aye. House Bill 2240 will be sent to the floor with the due pass recommendation. I'll be the carrier on that deal. House Bill, closing the work session on House Bill 2240, opening the work session on 2241.
Mr. Chair, Annette Talbot, Legislative Coordinator for the Employment Department. House Bill 2241 is also, the provisions in that for on-site basis health and safety reviews were also contained in Senate Bill 109, which this committee approved and has sent down to Ways and Means. House Bill 2241, however, is actually a little bit, I think the administrator called it Senate Bill 109 light. It contains a few less things than Senate Bill 109, and therefore it actually has a smaller fiscal impact. The fiscal impact for 2241 is in the governor's budget. The budget has passed the Senate and is up on the House floor this evening.
for the Employment Department. What it would do is allow the division the authority to conduct basic health and safety reviews of new applicants for family child care registration, in contrast with Senate Bill 109, which would have covered all applicants, whether they were new or renewing. And it does not provide funds specifically for unannounced visits like Senate Bill 109 did. Since 109 is down in ways and means and we don't have any assured funding source for the additional components of that, we would appreciate the committee passing 2241 on, and if we can find additional funds, perhaps we can fund the additional components of Senate Bill 109. We had actually had the House Committee adopt some housekeeping amendments and clarifying amendments. Unfortunately, we didn't get in the House a engrossed bill, even though the House Committee actually adopted them. So what you see on the A4 amendments, or the A5 amendments, excuse me, we had some amendments that were the A4 amendments. There were some conflict amendments, so now the A4 amendments are contained in the A5 amendments. What you see in front of you, if you just wanted to glance through to see the changes that those made, are really definitional changes to clarify the change in terminology that we made throughout the chapter from registration without inspection to registration, and to clarify the different terminology, and also clarify that registration is still something where the care is in the provider's home in their living quarters, so that we don't change the intent of that. The building codes have given you some, building codes division has given you some testimony, I believe, that you have in your file. We'd like to assure the building codes about their concern on Section 4 that we don't intend to change the manner in which we differentiate group homes from child care centers in terms of the types of requirements we would have in terms of architectural modifications. So they're a bit concerned that the change in terminology has somehow changed how we would enforce that. We don't intend any change on that, and we want to assure them that their concerns will go noted, and we won't make any changes in the way that we deal with group homes as opposed to centers. The counties, I believe, and local governments also had a concern because of the change in terminology on Section 17. So for the record, I would say that Section 17, again, is not intended to make any substantive changes. It is only intended to make terminology changes so that the zoning requirements would stay the same as they are now. Mr. Chair, we gave the committee, I don't know if we had this for you when we were talking about Senate Bill 709, but we do have a list of the types of basic requirements that we would be looking for. And if you have any questions, we'd be glad to answer them.
I have a question. Okay, I noticed on page 3 you changed family group home initial certification, and you changed it to a group child care home. And then when I go to the definition, I don't see a definition for a group child care home. And I don't see a family home anymore. So what's happening?
Senator Duncan, Senator Sandy, I appreciate that question. So you can, for the record, clarify what the terminology change is. Right now, the chapter unfortunately uses the word certified to mean a lot of different things. So on page 1 of the bill, certification is now defined to mean a group child care home or a child care center or other center pursuant to 657-280. Which is basically Section 4 of the bill, I believe, yes. So that certification will now refer to those two types, a group home and a child care center. And then on the next page of the bill, registration will refer to what we now call family child care providers. And again, that care is provided in the home of the...
Where is that?
On page 2, Senator Shannon, the new subsection 9. So we've attempted to...
Page 2, 9, what line?
28. No, oh, you've got a little bit. Line 21 and 22. So we've melded the definitions together.
I don't see anything about a home. Have I got an old bill?
on the Hamden Grove, which would contain the APOD.
For a child care home, the care is provided in the family living quarters of the provider's home. So you still are able, because I didn't see that.
Yes, Senator Tatum, we did catch that because we were trying to make the terminology consistent. We hadn't picked that back up in the definition of registration. So registration now would be family child care, 4 to 10 kids from more than one family, which is currently referred to as RWI, or registration.
And they're not required, to be certified. They just are registered.
That's correct, Mr. Chair, Senator Shannon. That's the distinction, yes.
Okay, because I just didn't want in all of our organizing that too. Get it in the home.
But we appreciate the question.
Any other questions? Okay, I'm going to close the work session. I'm closing the public hearing on House Bill 2241, and I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2241.
Move the A5 amendment.
Senate Control moves the A5 amendment.
Did you, to be registered in the home, did you reduce the number of children in this bill?
Mr. Chair, Commissioner, no, the number is the same.
Okay,
any discussion on the amendments? Well, that's 5 minutes. Hearing none, adopted.
Chair moves the bill.
Senator Crowell moves House Bill 2241 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Clerk will call the roll.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. 2241 will be sent to the due pass as amended. Will be sent to the due pass recommendation. I'll carry the bill. And I'm going to close the work session on 2241. Thank you for your work.
Thank you.
I need to comment that I'm not completely pleased on 2241. I think, frankly, 109 was a better bill and got us what we were really after. I really want to get everybody registered, and I really would like to have those inspections because I think that needs to be done. But you can't get everything all at once, but we'll be back next session.
Well, Senator Duncan, would you also, for the record, we do plan on still pushing Senate Bill 109 and finding funding for that bill. I would like to go on record as saying that is the ideal, and I agree with you wholeheartedly.
Thank you. Now, folks, this, in just a moment, I'm going to gavel the adjournment of this committee, and as the chair, I just would like to thank this committee. This has been a fantastic. It really has. I've just enjoyed the cooperation and you've all done, and very, very appreciative. Glad to have been able to work with you all, so I wish you the very best. So thank you.
Are we going to have a party?
Well, we need to have a party. Don't you want to have a party?
I think we've had the best one-liners of anywhere in the House or Senate in this committee.
Well, based on that, at this point, then I am going to, and I'm sorry I did Senator Lynn, could not be with us, but we are spiritual with him and Miss Lynn too. And I'm going to adjourn, and thank you very much. And the gavel is now down. We close the work of this session for the General Government Committee, unless the President has some reason to bring us back into meeting.